All right, cool. Welcome back to Chapo's Corner. It is I, your host, Faya, Miss Chapo. Today's episode is dedicated to the late, great Kate Spade, you know, who dominated and made her way through the fashion industry for so many years before coming to, her demise. Just a week or so ago. This is a part of the mental health awareness series. And, as one person who personally has their own experience with it and has friends and family that I know who suffer from it, we've, you know, probably shared with each other, not necessarily saying, hey, I have this issue, but praise God, you know, feeling that we can comfortably speak our minds and share with somebody, you know, the other person while hearing. Like myself, hearing my friend talk about that, I said, you know what? I suffer as well from depression. You know, some of my friends have actually got what we call or we term in the city like certified. So they've got diagnosed and they're on medications and things like that. But they still have, you know, things that they go through. They're trying to cope and understand. And then you have ones like me who I may have take the online screen assessment, which always tells me, you know, you should go and seek a psychiatrist, talk to a professional immediately, you know, or call somebody. And I haven't done so. So I know, you know, for a fact that, you know, I have, like I said, personally suffered from depression. What bothers me, and speaking from someone who has suffered from mental illness, so I can speak like this, and I want to raise awareness so much because I saw a lot happen in my life and a lot of my loved ones' lives who suffer from personal, from mental illness or who suffer from mental disabilities just last year. I've seen people get discriminated against and had their rights violated under the mental health, mental hygiene law of New York State violated when they go to doctor's appointments and stuff. This is why I'm actually an advocate for a relative of mine because they are obviously always taking advantage of him. So me being now having power of attorney over him, but also, living will and the one that deals with his health records and basically just all aspects of it, they are no longer able to do that. But I find even when I go into hospitals with him or an ER or something and I just, come with him like I'm supposed to as the guardian, the more I know, the more I'm despised. It's kind of like they just want to... they just want to put you away somewhere. They want to just take the patient who is suffering from mental disability and kind of just toss them in a room somewhere and just let them sit there. So when you come out and you start talking, because I'm very knowledgeable, I actually printed out all the legal mental health hygiene law for New York State, what they're supposed to do in a clinical setting, what they're supposed to do as far as the ambulatory services maybe coming to your house, the rights that they have as mental health patients or people with mental health disabilities. And the rights that they don't have, you know, I've actually filed complaints all the way up to the Americans with Disabilities Act, the United States Department of Justice. That's how far I've gone. And I filed complaints in my many hospitals and stuff like that because I've seen it. That's actually one of the main reasons why I don't want to get certified. Because with all these electronic records being out now and them being able to just electronically just pull up your records, and sometimes you don't even have to sign a paper. You can say, you can sign the paper that says, I give you permission to access them, and you can decline to sign the paper that says that you give them permission, but they'll still access it. I've seen that too, you know? So I don't want to get certified. I'm scared to get certified because the ones that I have seen from my friends and my families and my loved ones, it's like once that's on your paper, especially with these electronic medical records now, it's like they start to treat you way differently. It's a big form, but it always ends up in the worst case scenario. And I don't mean they were just rude to you. And I don't mean that I just mean like your level of service of care will not, they just treat you like you're not even a human being. Going back to Kate Spade though, I know what depression is like and I know what it's like to be on the verge of wanting to kill yourself. I saw this meme today on social media. I think I can actually pull it up while I'm talking to you guys. And I like what it said because I'm exactly the same way. I smile all the time. I'm a very silly person. And it's always been a coping mechanism for me and also like something that I just hide behind because if I'm smiling, like, you know, nobody knows what's going on with me. I look happy, so nobody knows that I'm really sad. And the meme has a picture of Kate Spade and she's smiling. And it looks like she's at the New York Academy of words or something. And under the picture, it has the caption, Kate suffered from depression and anxiety for many years, he writes. But there was no indication and no warning that she would do this. It was a complete shock. So the person who posted this on IG, and the caption wrote, a day after her death, Kate Spade's husband, Andy Spade, releases a statement. She suffered from depression and anxiety for many years. RIP Kate. I worry for myself and I worry for other people. Because while I've been battling depression since 16 years old, on and off, and I'm 33 years old now, there are many times I was able to pull myself out of it by myself. There hasn't necessarily been anybody that I know, not even my own mother, who actually was aware of what was going on with me, that I was this close to harming myself. And she could just come home one day and just find me there like it's just a lifeless corpse. Like, nobody knows, you know? There's been years that I've been in isolation. I could have just killed myself and nobody would have known a thing. What surprises me, though, and amazes me, which is why I'm bringing so much awareness, is this year that I've come out and reached out to people and friends, and I try to share with them as best as I can, because, you know, you can't blame people for not knowing what's going on with you. So you try to tell them. It's kind of like if I was an alcoholic and I was recovering, and somebody invites me somewhere, I say, hey, man, maybe is there going to be alcohol there? Well, I'm in my early stages of recovery. Maybe I can't go right now. I'm not that strong. You know, they would have to understand, or this friend or whoever. It could be a family member. It could be someone I'm dating. You know, some people in those situations, I've had friends tell me, listen, I'm in recovery. So when we're going out, you know, I can't drink. And so I'm like, you know, well, we don't got to go to a bar or something. Like, maybe we just come to my house and we'll just cook a meal and just, you know, settle in. We gotta drink it. Because I respect it. I understand it. But if people don't understand or know that you're going through something, and a specific something that needs their support or their kind of like awareness of it, they're not going to know. So, long story short, I told people, I shared openly. Because everything that I've survived and I've overcome is not for myself. I like to pay it forward, and I want to help somebody in that situation because I know what it's like. And I know what it's like to want somebody to give you a word and not be able to have it. I had no words. It's amazing that I even came out. I had my God, you know, the God that I serve, you know. And I'm just thinking about the people that I talk to now who are in my life, how I tell them, guys, I'm sorry I was away. I'm sorry that I was distant. I'm sorry I was withdrawn. I was suffering through a lot. I go through depression. I have my moments that I have my days, but I'm doing my best to come out. I want to reunite with everyone. I want to pick up where we left off and not miss out on any more of what's been going on. I'm not going to let depression rob me anymore. But what I noticed, especially with all these Kate Spade memes, it really touched me, because somebody said something like, you never know what's behind the smile, you know, be kind to everybody. So while I'm coming out and I'm talking to my friends now and I'm smiling and I'm being my normal silly self that they knew me to me as children, because most of them are from my childhood, either grade school, high school, college, or something. So I've known them many, many years, and they have a special place in my heart, which is why I came back to look for them, because it bothered me that I was missing out on their lives, and I knew for a fact that they worried about me. They were worried, and they wanted to know what was going on with me, if I was okay. They were looking for me. But I find sometimes when I talk to them, if they don't understand, they love me, they still know me. Sometimes they might not understand where I'm coming from, and they might make certain remarks or comments that it's not their fault now. They're not intentionally trying to hurt or be malicious or cruel. As a matter of fact, I know for a fact that when they're talking to me, they at times forget that I'm someone who deals with depression. So that maybe I'm still have like that. If if you don't understand it, you don't understand how to approach it. And so I find myself in times where they say certain things to me, or they do certain things or whatever. It's a way that they're somewhat careless. If they were aware of what they were doing, they would remember. And I don't want to say to them, hey, you know what, I suffer from depression, you know, just watch how you talk to me sometimes, or watch how you, you know, criticize. It's not to say, just keep it nice and keep it clean. This is why when I talk to people, and I seem like such a softy, nerdy girl now, I use my words right and correctly, because I'm aware that there are people out there who are very similar to me, who can look perfectly normal, sane, and fine, have a beautiful, loving, beaming smile on their face, but inside their world is crumbling apart, and they just feel like they just don't want to be here anymore. You know what I mean? Like, if anything, the body just keeps waking up every morning, and they're just going through, but for the most part, they don't want to wake up, or they don't want to get out of bed, but they just have to, and they just have to keep pushing through, you know? I'm the type of person, I told them when I went back on Facebook, I used to put up pictures. I used to say, well, let me, you know, because everybody said, where's the picture? Where's the picture? We haven't seen you in so long. Post the picture. It's just, you know, your thoughts and your posting, but we want to see you. And so I started posting all these pictures, and I'm, you know, making my little quirky comments as always. And I'm saying circa 2000, circa 2001, giving them, you know, the years, summer, different hairstyles and everything. And then one photo I remember I put up, and the caption said, all right, now I said that, I know I said I was battling depression, but I never said that I fell off. And what I meant by that is, I know you're looking at these pictures and you all are liking them and like, oh my God, why do you hide your face? You know, you're so beautiful and all, whatever, your smile, and you know, I missed you, whatever. All these glowing, loving, flattering compliments, okay, about me and my appearance and how my I haven't changed in my look since high school. I still look like a little baby. And it's great. But what I wanted people to say is that look at these pictures, how you love them so much and how they're so charming to you and so captivating and my smile is so this and all the things that you see. What you wouldn't see though when you're looking at that picture is I was on the verge of depression. I probably wouldn't kill myself the night before I took the picture or that morning. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I just snapped out of it. Because I'm pretty sure, I think I'm bipolar. Like I said, I haven't got diagnosed and I'm kind of scared because I just feel like these days, especially with Obamacare and these electronic files, and I've seen my own loved ones, friends, and family by experience, even being with them in ER hospitals myself as their legal guardian over their health care, over their health and their lives, how much you know, they get mistreated and their rights get violated severely. You know, it's not even funny anymore and it's very scary. Again, I've complained all the way up to sometimes the United States Department of Justice, and it'll go so far as that they're too busy to even investigate. It's not even that you don't have a case or anything, they just don't want to investigate it. And the hospital's always going to cover themselves or whatever. So my bottom line with my friends is they don't know what they're doing sometimes. And I'm sure by the time we get off the phone or the time we separate ways from hanging out with each other or having a lunch or a dinner, they move on with their day. But they're not every day consciously aware of the fact that I'm somebody who suffers from depression. I know for a fact that they never took the time to sit down and Google depression to try to understand what my mindset is like on some days. Which will explain some of the behaviors that they say they don't understand that they take so personally. Maybe they can understand where I'm coming from. You know, but, you know, there's a lot of people, we're walking around here judging a lot of people off their behavior, and a lot of people who are under mental health people are suffering from mental health disabilities, whether they were diagnosed or not. You know, because sometimes by the time you're diagnosed, you could have had the syndrome or the symptoms for many years, decades even. It just took a while for maybe a doctor to sit down and properly diagnose you and put it on paper. And then by the time that happens, you know, depending on the support you have, and if you take care of yourself, you know, you can get yourself a proper medication and use the proper tools to cure yourself. But it does scare me sometimes that I feel like I might end up like Kate Spade. Obviously, she was dealing with this for years, on and off. So on and off for years, she's picking herself back up. I'm afraid I might be one of those people who just keep picking myself back up. But what if one day or one year, like Kate, it just gets to be too much? And I, even though I have a husband who's somebody that I should be able to turn and talk to and say, honey, I need help. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going through, I'm deeply saddened. Like, I don't know what to do. I can't concentrate on anything. Like, please help me to get help. I don't know what to do. And I need you. You know, how do you have a husband and your husband is making a statement? I mean, like, I don't want to get upset, but this is what I want to try to, you know, I so desperately need to wear awareness in this. Like, I wish I could even have my friends listen to this. Because some of the things they say to me sometimes, or the way they critique me, or I want to say judge me, it's not their fault. They're being honest. And I love honesty and everything, but I want to say to them, dude, chill. You know, like, please be aware when you're coming in this area and in this zone to talk to me. You're dealing with somebody who battles depression. You got to watch what you say to me, man. You know what I'm saying? You got to watch what you say. You got to watch how you handle me. I'm still kind of like a time bomb. You got to chill with it. Because the thing with people like us, when it's time for us to check out, we're going to check out. By the time you weren't listening now, we weren't going to call you. Every single time that I stabbed myself out of potentially harming myself or committing suicide, you know what I thought about? I thought of my mother, how she lost her mom and she lost my dad, and that, you know, that completely changed her, and I'm all that she really has, and she lived her entire life for me, what that would do to her. And I think about people like my dearest cousins who are like more like brothers to me, and it's never really a big group of people. It's usually like maybe three or four people. I really want to say three. Like my two male cousins that I know they're like brothers to me who love me dearly, that would be devastated and it would change their life forever, my mother. And that would immediately stop me, you know. But God forbid one year, maybe it's 10 years from now, maybe they all, God forbid, passed away. And I don't have that thought anymore to say, well,
well, I don't want to do that because mom's going to be hurt. Or I don't want to do that because cousin so-and-so, they would be so devastated. You know, we're like brother and sister. Like, what? And what if they passed away already or they're gone? I'd be like, well, what? There's nothing left for me to hold on to. Maybe I get like Kate. You know, and I just want everybody to just be nice to one another. I just want people to just be more respectful to one another. I just want people to stop thinking just because somebody has all this money or because they're pretty or beautiful or good looking or attractive, you know, that things are okay. I want people to learn how to just start treating people like people, because sometimes it's just that simple. You know, people need to just start listening more. Sometimes you just start listening. I sent somebody a video the other day. They told me that when they looked at it, from what they heard, I was rambling. I could have had a video. This could have been a whole video about I'm going to kill myself right now. But for you, you took it as rambling and then told me that I looked weird. I mean, this is fine or whatever. But at the end of the day, that could have been the last video. But because you couldn't get past the fact that I'm rambling, what am I rambling about? Did you try to take the time to figure that out? Of course not. And so it makes me sad when I think about K-State. And I'm such a fashionista and I love fashion, but it just makes me sad. Now, of course, this could be part of a conspiracy theory thing. I haven't gone to YouTube yet because I am, you know, aware. And a lot of them is either they killed themselves or drug overdoses. That's how everybody famous goes out. But let's say she did kill herself. You know, we got to talk about this. I'm not going to let another single person kill themselves. If you're out there and you want to kill yourself, you better talk to me right now. It'll be between you and I. I'll never talk about it even on this broadcast, on this episode. You email me right now at firechapo4president@petlover.com. FIRECHAPO. 4president@petlover.com. You know, I'm your friend. You got a friend here. You never alone. You can talk to me. And again, I'll never, ever, 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 ever discuss anything you don't want me to discuss or name you on air. But you don't need to be alone, okay? And the other thing that's been going around lately like crazy is the suicide prevention number. I've been talking about suicide since last year, ever since that song came out by that group. I'm going to come back with it, you know? But yeah, I'm going to take a break now, as a matter of fact. And think about this, guys. You know, be nice to each other, to people. You don't know what people are going through. You might say one thing to the person, and to you, you left it alone. And they harbored it for like 3, 4 days, 5 days. But on top of what you said, there was also a bunch of other nagging things that was driving them crazy. But your comment was the one that drove them over the edge, you know? Be nice to one another. Chapo's. Yeah, hello, we're back. I'm talking about Kate Spade, and I wanted to share an article from Fox 5 New York. My hometown, my city. Entitled, As Suicide Rates Rise, CDC Urges Mental Health Awareness. CDC is a center for disease control. All right. When designer Kate Spade took her own life this week, God bless the dead, it shocked the fashion world and her legions of fans. But her death is part of an alarming upward trend of suicides. A new CDC report finds that suicides rose across the country in more than half of states by more than 30%. Between 1999 and 2016. The causes range from financial stress to substance abuse to relationship issues. In fact, the report found that more than half of those who took their own life didn't have a diagnosed mental health condition. That is why the CDC and mental health practitioners are calling for more education and awareness. A lot of people are feeling like this. All right, we need to actually start to have a conversation about mental health that we don't talk about in this country, says Dr. Ben Michaels, a clinical psychologist. People like Claudia Herrera, whose Facebook post about Spade's suicide has now been shared more than 200,000 times. Herrera, a fan of Spade's design, wrote that she never knew the designer suffered from depression. But I knew when Patrick Swayze was battling pancreatic cancer. I know that Cynthia Nixon is a breast cancer survivor, Herrera wrote on Facebook. I know that Dave Letterman suffers from heart disease. I know that Lance Armstrong is a testicular cancer survivor, but I didn't know that Kate Spade suffered from depression.
or that Robin Williams did. Because I miss him. I'm sorry, this is off the article, but I miss him so much. Yeah, Robin Williams. God bless the dead. Because somehow society has made it more acceptable to talk about breasts and testicles, the testes, testicles. I'm saying everything wrong. Then about the mind. The CDC recommended that employers try to foster a healthy environment that reduces stigma about seeking help and that schools teach coping skills. The CDC also said that spreading the word about resources is very important, okay? Such as the Suicide Prevention Hotline, which offers support 24 hours a day. 800, guys, 273-8255. It's a toll-free number, 800-273-8255. Swallow your pride. If you're not going to reach out, to me, Fire Chapel, which I swear, if you do, I promise you, absolute confidentiality. Nobody will know your business. Reach out to me if you need somebody to talk to. If it's not me, please, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It's a lifeline. It'll save your life. Don't ever, never stop fighting for your life. You hear me? Somebody out there, because I know what it's like. I'm there all the time. I'm right there right now sometimes. I know what it's like. Fight for your life. Don't let nobody take you under. Don't let nobody take you down. You think of Kay Spade. You think of River Phoenix. You think of everybody. Even if they die from an overdose. Think of them and you fight. Don't let nothing take you out like that. Now, there's a couple things about this article because that was it that I just read that just stuck to me that I wanted to just stress real quick. It's very simple, really. All right? We need to talk about it. Now, I myself, I can honestly say, as a child growing up, my mother, she doesn't even know. I have never been honest with my mother about my depression. She has no idea how many times I've honestly wanted to take my own life. When I was younger, in my teenage years, up until my early 20s, until, you know, it's better these days. Please, believe me. But in my younger days, when I didn't know what I was doing, I didn't have a hang of it, it was really bad. She doesn't know. I've isolated myself for a very long time. And recently, in the past 6.5 months or so, I've been reuniting and reconnecting with old friends that meant so much to me, who I've missed dearly and felt like I was missing out on their lives. And not only that, I knew that they were genuinely concerned and worried for me. Where is she? How is she? What is she doing? Like, I haven't heard from her. Where is she? Is she okay? And I can honestly say that even though I have shared with them, in all honesty, out of love and no shame and lack of pride or anything like that, just saying, hey guys, this is what happened to me. This is my story. I battled depression. I apologize dearly and I'm coming out, but bear with me as I come out and get my life back. And some of them, the way they talk to me some days, and then the way, I wouldn't say the way they treat me, but maybe they do treat me like a stigma, or maybe they don't understand who I am. But they'll say things sometime, or describe me as weird, or something. But again, coming from the mindset of the perception of someone who is suffering or battling from depression, their words to me are kind of careless or tactless. And yes, while they're used to maybe saying this to other people, and it's okay, they don't understand, and I wish they understand what sometimes they're doing to me. Or sometimes they judge me and they already put me in this box. Which to me basically lets me know they haven't taken the time to Google depression, the behaviors of people suffering depression, what they grow through, what they feel like. Because if you did, you wouldn't be so quick to call me weird. You wouldn't be so quick to call me socially awkward. You wouldn't be so quick to say any of that thing. You would just sit there and understand and read and be like, you know what? I got it. And they haven't taken the time to do that. Why I'm afraid? I'm afraid for me, I'm afraid for other people, because while I've been going through this since I'm 16 years old, that's when depression literally started for me, 16 years old. I'm 33 years old today. I've been able to pull myself back out of it on and off over the years by myself without people even knowing that I was going to kill myself tonight. I was going to kill myself last week. I was going to kill myself 2 years ago. Nobody knew. I just put myself out. And the way that I always put myself out was saying the same thing. I thought of my mother, who already lost her mother, my grandmother. God bless the dead, and my father along the way. And how I am literally her everything, how she lives for me, lives, breathes her entire life, you know? And I love my mother so dearly, and I would never want to do that to her, especially intentionally make that decision, and I would stop. And there are two of my male cousins who I love so dearly, who are more like brothers to me than they are cousins, who I know for a fact, if they ever heard or knew something like that, it would just devastate them. And that would stop me, okay? But my point with that is, thank God they're still here and they're alive. That if I even feel like that today, maybe I could say, you know what? My cousin so-and-so, and my mom. But guess what? It could be 10 years later, and I'm still battling with depression on and off. And God forbid, you know, they have all gone home to glory. My two cousins and my mom. And I might be like Kate Spade. I might just have that moment again because they said she was battling it for years. Okay. And one day I might say, yo, I want to do it. And then think about it. And then the things that I normally used to think about for maybe 15 years on and off is like my mom and my cousin so-and-so and my cousin so. And I'd be like, wait a minute, but they're all dead now. You know, God forbid, I'm not going to what. Well, at that point, guess what? There's not going to be nothing else to hold me now, is it? It don't matter who I done told, because I'm the type of person, I smile all the time. You don't look at me. Don't listen to me and listen for, to listen to see if you're going to hear the person, because you're not going to hear it. And that's the tricky thing. Be kind to people. If you don't got nothing nice to say or like to say, keep your mouth shut. Don't say nothing at all. If you don't understand nothing, keep your mouth shut. This is why today when I walk around and some people look at me like I'm soft, I'm weirdo, I'm this like naive little thing. I'm not naive at all. The people who keep their mouth shut and they don't say anything, they're actually way wiser and way stronger than the people that just with their little attitudes and their little nitpicky thing and their little slick comments and their little one-word answers and their little one-liners and they think they're so cute and they think they're so cool. But guess what? You can't control your mouth. And the only time you feel better is when you say something to somebody to feel slick. Something slick and crazy to make you feel cool, like the person is inferior and you superior. Guess what? You're a bully in a way. And I don't want to be the person, because I know the power of words. There are some things that some people told me years ago. 10, 15, 10, it's still in my head. Some of you need to understand that sometimes you say things to people, you leave them. As far as you're concerned, you stop thinking about it. It was left there, it was said there. There's nothing to think about. It's 10 years later, this person's still remembering that thing that you said. You probably didn't even mean it, but it's still stuck in their head because of the way their head was thinking and you weren't aware and you planted that seed. Don't let 10 years pass and more people add on to that shit that you put there. Excuse my language, but this is a message that needs to be brought home. Now they got your comment that you did 10 years ago. This person, further from the 10 years since your comment. And then, of course, one day they go to work or they have a relationship or they have financial problems or something. And that pushes them completely over the edge and they kill themselves. I don't want to be responsible for nothing like that. I don't want to put words out there like that. I'd rather be sweet, kind, and loving to people and them have me think I'm stupid, naive, and a dummy than to sit there and look cool and slick and cunning and whatever the hell it is and coolest kid on the block type thing, talking slick and crazy to everybody just so I look like I'm the shit, excuse my language. Meanwhile, I'm hurting people's feelings that could potentially lead them to harm themselves later on. You know, how are you married to somebody? You lay down with them at night. I'm so upset about Kate. I'm upset about anybody that kills themselves. It's got to stop. I'm not going to let nobody let me kill me. Let me kill me. I'm not going to let it happen. How do you have a husband you can't talk to your husband? Yeah, that's your husband. That's my husband. He can't see. He's up there talking about some, oh, I know she, and you know she suffered. This is what I'm saying about my friends. They know that I do. I don't think they care to understand what it's about. So then when I do things, it's like, you're weird, you're strange, and then it's like, oh, it's okay. But I can literally see my friend saying the same thing that Kate Spade's husband said right there in that sentence. Well, I knew that she suffered from depression and anxiety on and off for all of these years. But towards the end, I'd have never saw no sign of Fire Chapel so smiley and friendly and charming and humorous, and I would have never known. Because you didn't take the fucking time to understand. You said, oh, you got problems. You got days where you're sad sometimes. Study depression and figure out what it's about. I'm going to take a break because I need to. I'm about to rip this mic out the wall. Nobody's dying no more. I'm not going to let nobody die. I'm tired of people dying. You know what I'm saying? For foolishness and for stupidness and because nobody's around. Again, suicide prevention hotline, 24 hours a day. 800-273-8255. And when that song came out last year, I broke down and cried because I said, wow, yeah. And this guy who sang the song, he suffered and battled from depression too. And I'm like, this is what we need to talk about it because people need that. And then I went to YouTube and I read the comments and I was bawling like a little baby because those people are just like, oh my God, I was going to kill myself. I was just about to kill myself, but I heard the song and saved my life. But what really overwhelmed me even more, excuse me, I'm getting choked up thinking about it now, is the number of people who just came in masses, complete and absolute strangers, who were like, listen, dude, don't kill yourself. Don't die. You have so much to live for. If you need somebody to talk to, email me right now, right here. I'm here. I don't know who you are. I don't care. All I know is that you're special. You're somebody, and I don't want you to kill yourself right now. That was amazing to me to know that people care. So what's amazing is to know is that if somebody knows, they actually will jump in. But if you're looking for signs, people, is my most powerful message today, and I'm trying to say, if you're looking for a sign, you're not gonna find one. It's the kind of thing you have to kind of just keep checking in and just keep talking to the person and really talking to them. Not just on the surface. Talk to them and be like, how are you doing with your depression right now? How do you feel? Let them know that you're available, ready to talk, you know? Don't say or criticize them too harshly. Even if you feel the criticism or you feel some way, you're entitled to that feeling. But because that person is still going through or coming out of something, especially like a depression or some kind of mental illness, be patient and take your time. Not every single one of your thoughts have to be made known to them at that time. How weird they are, how creepy, how clingy, how awkward they are, socially awkward they are, you know? You don't have to let all those things be known right there at that moment. When they get better and they're able, but, you know, take the time to study what they may have. If somebody tells you they have PTSD, look it up. If somebody tells you that they have anti-psychotic, look it up. Bipolar depression, look it up. If somebody tells you they have multiple personality, look it up. You know, they tell you that, look it up. Don't just assume and talk them, you know, into a box, you know? Because when they kill themselves, because that's what usually happens after a while, okay, or they use drugs up so much and alcohol up so much that kills them. You know, you're going to wonder what the hell you could have said or what the hell you could have did. It's better for you to search that Google now and get some education than to sit there at that funeral now and then have all that guilt. And I tell you that unresolved guilt is a motherfucker. Excuse my language, but you don't want that. And on that note, Fire Tribe, we're going to take a break. Excuse my tone, y'all, but I'm tired. Ain't nobody dying no more on my watch. All right? And y'all hit me if you need someone to talk to. Fire Chapo for president. Straight spelled out. At petlover.com. We'll be right back. Good morning, y'all. This is your host, Fire Chapo. Welcome back to Chapo's Corner. I meant to finish this segment yesterday. R.I.P. Kate Spade, mental health awareness, let's talk about it. But I had to take a break. I was getting a little emotionally riled up. And then I spoke to my homegirl called me, my good friend, I just call her Gigi. And then I went and we got lost in the sauce. We had a good little afternoon, Saturday afternoon. And I'm waking up now. Well, actually, I woke up two hours ago. But it's 5:50 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, New York time, on Sunday, June 10th. And we're just coming back, picking up where we left off. Since we last talked, let me see if I can find my notes. I was sharing my personal experience with depression, how it affected me, my life, a little bit of my loved ones, my friends and family's experiences. And of course, we talked about Kate. Since the last episode, and of course, you know, got to hang out with my girl and have a good time. So, you know, that was just fun. That just, you know, didn't have anything to do with the episode. I just got distracted, but it was a much needed distraction. I started thinking about more people that we could talk about. You know, of course, other people died as well from suicide. I don't know. It was like this. Listen, like I said, I haven't hit the YouTube yet to talk about this, the theories and stuff. But for now, we're going to say they all committed suicide. And I thought about Michael Phelps and how he came out recently, not that long ago, and shared his own, you know, experience battling anxiety, depression, and suicidal thoughts. I read a lot about what he said around that time because it was just so motivational and inspiring to me. And again, most people, the mindset or the understanding of us everyday people, when we look up at people like Michael Phelps and, you know, we admire their achievements, we know that he's filthy, stinking rich, and we feel like they could want for nothing in this world, that they don't have a care in the world, only to find out that they are suffer from everyday problems that you and I suffer from every single day, such as mental illness and other things. So, the boy already had my attention. You know, I like Phelps. But when he said that, you know, he got my respect. You know, because he came out and said something that he didn't have to. So, it's my understanding, reading his stories and the articles, is that 2004 was the first time, or his first depression spell that he went into.
And if we all remember, in 2004, that was the same year that he was charged with driving under the influence. And when I thought about that, it made sense to me, because I was like, oh, yeah, I definitely remember, because I remember people were saying, well, what's going on? And they were trying to, I wouldn't say demonize him, but when he's such a, you know, that American boy and that poster boy, especially for USA in the Olympics and all that, it wasn't a really good look. That's the other thing that I wanted to bring up, the correlation between mental health illness and substance abuse, because there's a lot of people out here who are self-medicating and they seem normal, like normal people, that they just like, they're just stoners or they're, you know, they just like to drink a lot. Maybe some of you just say, you know, you're, the only problem you probably have is just you're an alcoholic. But you have to remember, when people are self-medicating, they're actually running from something and they're trying to numb themselves. So I would say, yeah, if you see extremely strong, I don't know, more usage of drugs or alcohol in the mix, or they just start turning to them when they wasn't necessarily doing it before, or just more now, more so, more than ever, then something's going on, you know. People chase highs, you know, and things like that, but nobody's really chasing something that much so much as they're running from something, trying to block something out, trying to numb some pain, okay? Then, of course, Phelps in 2008, you know, just weeks after he won, I think he just, like, after the Olympics, that video came out showing him smoking marijuana from a bong, which, you know, marijuana is what it is. It's getting legalized in a lot of states. So, you know, to me, it wasn't really, but again, because he's like the poster boy and the Olympic golden child, you know, but so the more I read, the more I, you know, just because I just admired and I just wanted to know his story so much, you know, just to understand, and because I could relate and I was inspired. Come to find out that there was always a certain specific time of year where he would feel extremely depressed. And the most depression that he felt, or the times when he really, 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 really felt depressed, was after the Olympics. After every single Olympics, he just felt super down and super depressed. As a matter of fact, I believe it was after the Olympics of 2012 that I read. That was the hardest fall for him. The hardest, deepest, darkest depression spell, where I think he said he sat in a room for like 3 to 5 days. He didn't eat anything. He really didn't sleep. He self-medicated and he just thought about killing himself constantly. Which led him to realize, you know what? I need to get myself some help. So if you're listening to what I just said, Phelps started his first depression spell in 2004. Which was the same year that he got the driving under the influence, okay? And then we know that in 08, they caught him with the smoking the bomb. But if you look, it wasn't until 2012 that he actually went to seek help. So that's 8 years between 2004 and 2012. You know, that's a long time to still be going back and picking yourself up, you know? And I just want to point out, this is somebody who's, you know how many Olympics he's won? When you're this boy, this is a golden boy. Like I said, this is the poster boy for U.S. Olympic swimming. This is him. This is the boy, Phelps. And even though he accomplished all those things that we're cheering him on, and we're still looking to read articles about him as soon as he comes back, and this is when he would have the most lowest moments in his life. And I just wanted to point out just how much, how human they can be. I have a quote here where he said, drugs were a way from him running away from whatever it was I wanted to run from. That's what he said. You know? And of course, Mariah Carey came out recently and said that she suffered from bipolar depression, and that very, very, very public breakdown. Instead of breaking me down, that's on that butterfly. I don't know about that. Yeah, but that breakdown that she had on that TV, that, you know, my girl, yeah, that was, they didn't say it then, you know, but she was diagnosed around that time. So she didn't come out and tell us until, of course, she got in control. It's her personal, it's nobody's business. We love Mariah. We know she a little, you know, she nutty, but we love Mimi. That's baby girl. Butterflies for life. Hashtag butterfly. Okay. But she shared a story. And then, of course, actress Jennifer Lewis who's everybody most should know her name, but she's mostly prominent in the African-American community and African-American films. Hilarious comedian. She suffered from bipolar depression and recently came out. So, I would like to raise awareness. This is what this episode is about. I want to come back after we take a short break and discuss some signs to look out for. Although, I don't believe that there are. There are. Don't get me wrong. But I just feel like by the time the person, nobody, unless they call the 800 hotline, I don't know that everybody openly just says, look, I'm going to kill myself right now. In 5 minutes, I got the gun too. I don't even want to talk these things out loud. You know? But it's time to raise awareness. Time to start talking about it. I want to come back with some tips of what we can do to spot it. You know, can I spot it? That and somebody else. Even though I've been through it, does that make me equipped to be able to spot somebody else's depression to see that they're technically on the verge? And is there something that I might say to them today? No, I wouldn't. And I know that for a fact because I know how well we can hide things. Okay? Which is why the only thing that I can do right now that I know of, especially if I don't know under the layers, the many layers of that person, what's going on, especially in the psyche and in mind. Only thing I can do is just say something nice and be kind. You know what I'm saying? So they could at least be like, you know what? In this crazy world, Fi is cool. That's a cool girl right there. She's golden. You know, like, she's dope. That's all I could do. You know, and of course, educate myself, not only on my own illness, mental illness that I suffer from, which is like depression. I feel like bipolarism. It could even be some anxiety in there. But to learn about all of the others so that when I do come across people, and I will, you know, who share with me or that I'm talking to, maybe even at these mental health, like, you know, the NAMI programs, because I'm really going to sign up to. I've written to a lot of people, so it should be, you know, really coming to pass, but so that when I'm going there and they say, you know, well, I'm suffering from this, I'm suffering from that, I don't have to be, you know, having to, okay, well, after I speak to them, I have to Google this and see what this is about. I can come in and be like, you know what, I'm familiar with what you're going through. And then they can know, you know, they have somebody that actually understands them. Because I know what that's like to at least have somebody to understand what you're going through. See you as a person, first and foremost, because you're still a human being. You're not, you know, an animal or anything like that. And then I wanted to bring up, maybe like pull up an article just to show the correlation between people who have mental health or suffer from mental health disability and the excessive substance abuse, okay, which would be alcohol and or drug usage or a combination of both, the self-medication and the self-destruction patterns. Because there's some people we see out here and we're like, first of all, addiction too, and we'll talk about that, is a disease of its own. So it's very hard, and that's why I say I don't judge, because it's very hard for, even if it's cigarettes. So some of these people, they think just because they don't do drugs or drink, because, you know, it could be cigarettes or whatever. You're addicted to something. You could be addicted to food. You could be addicted to sex. Hello, somebody. My whole point is just addiction overall. Why do I just don't want to? But these are ways, again, of escaping things. But specifically with mental health and disability and substance abuse, some people are looking like straight stoner idiots out here, but it's not their fault if you took the time to understand. Some of them are not diagnosed. You saw the article from the Center of Disease Control. They said a lot of the people in the new rise of suicides, which they are very, very concerned about, which is why they're starting to revamp schools and certain workplaces, enforcing that they have coping mechanisms for people who might be going through so they can decrease this alarming rate of suicides. Even they said that the ones who did kill them, they weren't necessarily diagnosed. They had never been diagnosed. So it's a lot of people running around here that's not certified, like myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not going to find that by the time I did it, that I, you know. But yeah, there is something deeply disturbing about wanting to take your own life. So even if you weren't diagnosed or certified as being a person with suffering mental disability, that final act that you did of taking your life, you know, they might not have been able to pinpoint exactly which one it was, but they'll probably just pinpoint to depression. I also want to talk about the correlation of mental health illness and substance abuse, because I believe that these celebrities of, you know, of past, you know, you got Jimi Hendrix, you got River Phoenix, they say Prince, but I don't know, you know what I'm saying? Of course, MJ, I mean, all the greats, Janis Joplin, Dorothy Dandridge, Billie Holiday, you know, all the ones that from overdoses, they were suffering from something. So that's what I feel like. You know how sometimes they say when people are on the street, there's only two options. You're either going to be dead or in jail. Well, I feel like with depression or mental health illness, it's like one or the other. You're either going to be, yeah, listen to me. You're either going to take your own life at some point if you don't get help, or you're going to be the type of person, you're going to substance abuse your ass to death. Excuse my language, but you know what I'm saying. Self-destruct by self-medicating overly. Okay. Overdosing even, you know, because nobody was going that hard and that strong on drinking or whatever to the point they killed themselves if they wasn't trying to save something going on in their head. So, again, I know that there is a correlation between that too. And I feel like there's something else I wanted to bring up. Yeah, because this is all in honor and memory of the late, great Kate Spade, Kate Girl, Baby Girl, Fashionista. You know what I'm saying? This world lost another one, man, another one. The fashion industry done lost an icon, you know, to something senseless. And I can only imagine how many fans she had and how many people told her that they loved her work and how wonderful she was and inspiring, and all the up-and-coming young fashion designers who wanted so much to just maybe be the next Kate Spade with a twist, you know what I mean, with their own little twist. But, you know, everybody has their mentors and the role models that they look up to. I could only imagine, you know, I could only imagine all the accolades and praise that she must have gotten in her life, you know, and still it wasn't enough, because sometimes for people that's not enough. And sometimes, like a good friend of mine told me, sometimes they hear that stuff so much all the time that it becomes like absolutely nothing. A compliment won't even mean anything. And I feel like that's where Kate reached. She reached the point. That happens to you sometimes too. You know, you could be very depressed and somebody could tell you that you're pretty and you're beautiful, but it doesn't matter how many people tell you that, you still never feel it. And depression is the same way. You could know a bunch of people. Heck, you could be in a room with about 500 people and mingling, and people are actually talking to you. So you actually notice. You're not just being the wallflower. You're not just holding the wall up. And you'll still feel lonely, like the loneliest person in the world, even with all those people around you. So I know what that feels like. And I guess I'm just trying to slowly kind of paint the mindset of what her life might have felt like to her at that point. She was obviously alone, no matter how many people were around her, from stylists to, you know, managers to her own husband. It didn't matter. She felt alone. Okay. And it didn't matter how, what she put on that morning or that day or that week, you know. And how many people told her that she was beautiful and stunning and doing the typical, you know, doing that typical Katie girl thing with a Katie glow. She wasn't moved by it. And the sad thing about it, the sad thing about all these stories, whether it's an overdose or they take their own lives, you have somebody say, well, we spoke to her the night before and she sounded crying and she was small. Oh, yeah, yeah. You all keep waiting for somebody to be talking like that. And guess what? Let's be honest. You all have had somebody tell you that was that, you know, but some people just like snap out of it. Stop being a little baby. You know, when you start having your bad days, yeah, don't worry. When it's checkout time, you know, and there's a Lifetime movie. I'm going to see if I can find it. When it's checkout time, and please forgive my language, okay? But I'm trying, I have to bring the point home. Ain't nobody calling you to come save the day. It was too many opportunities and too many cries by that point. There's not going to be no indication because you're going to come and stop it. Don't you understand that? Ain't nobody going to come and tell you. That's what I'm trying to explain to you all. And that's why I'm going to come back with how to spot it. Because ain't nobody going to come and get into it. Because that's the person that don't want to go. The person that wants to go is not going to sound like they're ready to go. Hello, somebody. I'm trying to help everybody. The ones that's like me. And the ones who are on the outside who just can't understand. You just got to Google depression. It's too many short articles. I'd say 3-4 minutes. Just read something. Bookmark something. Read it again. Bookmark it. Read it again. Ask questions. Ask the person questions if you want to, you know. But don't make them seem like a weirdo, because we're still human beings. We're still regular, sane people. I sound sane. I totally say I'm a perfectly educated, well woman. It's just I have feelings and emotions just like everybody else. And we all are affected differently in life. And we all experience different things in life that either make us or break us. But some scars still stay and they might alter you somewhat. You know, some things even ruin you. Some people don't ever bounce back. Their minds get shattered, you know, or scattered in so many different ways. It's like they get broken in the mind. And it does happen that way. That's how you get multiple personality disorders. Your mind split. You know what I'm saying? Like, so much trauma didn't happen. It could have been from, being molested as a child, you know, or something like that, or being severely beaten, or maybe it was just neglected as a child, like starved to death or something, whatever. It's just something that, or as you grew up in your teens or old years, because trauma can happen at any time. Maybe you were a rape victim. Doesn't matter what it is. But we all go through different things, and some things shatter the mind. And then that person doesn't ever come back. I had a girl in high school. She went through a very traumatic incident. She was such a pretty girl, and then we were very close. But then after that time, her mind wasn't, you know, some people just don't come back, is what I'm basically saying. Yeah, okay. And on that note, we're going to take a break, and I'm going to come back with some signs. In the meantime, remember what I said, be nice, be good to one another. All right, Chapel's Corner. BRB. Good morning. Welcome back to Chapel's Corner. It's again June 10th, Sunday morning, 8:51 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we're picking up where we left off in the RIP Kate Spade Mental Health Awareness. Let's Talk About It episode. I have an article here that discusses the relationship between mental illness and drug abuse. It was something that I brought up before we took a break. And I found the article from drugabuse.com. And this was reviewed by licensed practitioners. But it says it was reviewed by Eric Patterson. Who has all these letters after his name, so he's somebody. Okay. So it says, of people struggling with dual disorders, the majority, 55.8%, don't receive treatment for either disorder. Okay. Mental illness is common amongst a population suffering from substance abuse addiction. Okay. The relationship is so strong that many people believe that drugs play a causative role in the development of the mental illness. In most cases, this is not the case. In the United States, approximately 8.9 million people have both mental health and substance abuse issue. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, SAMHSA, tells us that of these people struggling with dual disorders, okay, again, the majority of them, about 55.8%, don't receive any treatment for either disorder. Okay, a mere 7.4% get treatment for both issues. Okay. Now it goes on to discuss the relationship between mental illness and drug abuse. Those who are mentally ill are more likely to abuse drugs and or alcohol. The two issues often go hand in hand, which is what I was discussing earlier. And I'm starting to realize that as much as we, as a society, especially in music, urban music especially, promoting every single form of drug use and alcohol binge use that they possibly can, from Molly to, you know, pills to marijuana, of course, we know that, and obviously drinking, okay, getting drunk, maybe even a combination of the two. Teens are very impressionable, and younger kids as well, especially when they have peer pressure, and they're very much influenced by that. So it's easy with them being like little sponges for them to absorb all the good but mostly bad that is around them. So I don't necessarily know that kids start using drugs for depression so much as it is for peer pressure, but I think maybe in time, if they do fall into mental illness, they'll start to realize that what everybody realizes was suffers from mental disability and uses substances like drugs, alcohol, and or both, is that it helps them escape the pain. It helps them to escape reality. a temporary fix, you know, or to the problem at hand. Per the National Institute on Drug Abuse, NIDA, those who suffer from mental illness may attempt to self-medicate their symptoms via drug use. When these individuals abuse drugs, they may feel less anxiety, depression, or neurosis, albeit temporarily. When the individual is not high, the symptoms of their mental health issue return, oftentimes stronger than they were before. Although many studies are ongoing, mental health professionals have determined a few things about addiction and mental health. Undiagnosed mental health illness can lead to substance abuse as the person tries to treat the symptoms of the mental condition. Depression, anxiety, paranoia, and restlessness are some of the common symptoms that mentally ill addicts are trying to self-medicate. Diagnosed mental illness patients often take medication that has unpleasant side effects. These patients abuse drugs to alleviate those side effects. For example, schizophrenia patients take medication for hallucinations that causes depression. The patients often smoke marijuana to deal with that depression. A few drugs can cause mental illness after years of chronic abuse. Drugs such as ecstasy alter chemicals in the brain that control mood and other behaviors. These alterations can lead to depression or anxiety problems that the addict treats with other drugs. People who are at risk for mental illness increase the risk when they chronically abuse drugs. Mental health risk factors include genetics, the environment, major life experiences and or things. People who already have high risk factors can be pushed into the mental illness by chronic substance abuse. And then the last one they have here is heavy drug abuse in the adolescent years can lead to mental illness later. Heavy drug abuse can alter the cognitive and social development of teens. Two things that are formulated during adolescence. When these factors are altered, depression and anxiety disorders can result. There are other theories on drug and mental health relationship. The important thing is that the work on the effects of the mental health on substance abuse and vice versa has led to many advances in the treatment of the patient after a dual diagnosis is made. When dual diagnosis is prescribed or put down, they then take you to a dual diagnosis rehab center, okay? And then they put a number there at the end of the article for everyone to call. So with the dual diagnosis, it doesn't mean that you have more than one mental illness or mental disability. I guess you could say classification. It's not saying that you fall into one or two or three or like, because you can have many. That doesn't mean it. What it means is that you suffer from mental illness and you also are self-medicating yourself via substances like drugs, alcohol, and or both. So if you fit that category of being mentally ill and also abusing drugs and alcohol, you are, dual diagnosis candidate, and they have a program. But that's what this drugabuse.com is talking about, a program which you could call and find out about that helps to treat both. And the truth of the matter, it is true. Some people you can't treat one without the other. If you got the dual thing going on, then you have to address both issues or else you're never going to get better. It's a good chance that you get rid of the mental illness, but then through the substance abuse and not even slowing down, of course that's going to reignite feelings of depression again. And if you quit the drugs and manage to get clean or be sober, but then the effects of the true reality now in the sober light makes you feel more and more and more and more depressed than you were when you were using, that's going to maybe trigger you to go back to using again. So obviously, without them both being diagnosed and handled at the same time, like this article is saying, a dual diagnosis, it would be really, really hard for one to get their life back on track, especially if they're not honest with themselves that they have a problem with both issues. But like I said, and I'm glad this article brought it up, they go hand in hand. Because I know people who use so excessively that, I mean, like I said, addiction is already a disease, and the person is not necessarily being controlled. Not necessarily in control is what I mean to say. Especially the stronger the drug. What I mean by that is like someone who has a heroin addiction or someone who has a cocaine or crack addiction. It's a little bit different because it's like that monster is like a monkey on their back, and they're the puppet. They are on strings and they are being, you know, pretty much controlled by something that they have absolutely no control over. So that's one thing that I would like to say about them, because there's a lot of judgment and stigma on it, as if that's kind of like, well, why don't you just stop? Well, I guess it's kind of like the person who's kind of addicted to drinking coffee every morning. No, coffee's not a drug. Well, some people say that it is, you know, because the way people act like when they don't have a cup. You know, I'm not a coffee drinker. I can drink coffee a few times here just for the sake of it. And what I mean by that is Dunkin' Donuts in the summer, I might just, it's cold and I just like all the different flavors. I'll get me an iced coffee. And if it's a situation where I might have like an overnight drive or something, or like a road trip where I'm doing, then I'll use coffee then. And that doesn't happen often, but I have had instances in the past that would account for another time maybe in the year. And then maybe if it's really, really cold and I don't know, I just am just in the mood to try something different. But the point is, coffee can be something that you're addicted to. You gotta take care of self. I like what they said about the ecstasy pills, though. Messing up the chemical imbalance of the brain, because that's very much true. And again, there's some people out here behaving in ways that we want to already dismiss as assholes or jerks or people who just are immature or whatever. And truth be told, they probably just have an underlying mental illness, because a lot of it has to do with your behavior and how you act based on the chemical imbalance or balance in your brain. And there's a lot of people out here that's just stoning and using. And some people want to say, well, do you want you to stop and show up for your life? And I just said a few minutes ago about the coffee, same way you can't quit the coffee, same way they can't stop. But a lot of people aren't just heavy drug and alcohol abusers simply because they like the taste of alcohol. Or no. I mean, how many times do you have people drinking alcohol? You think they like being hungover? Who likes being hungover? Who likes that feeling when you holding on to the toilet for dear, the dirty toilet for dear life, praying to the porcelain gods that they just get you through the night, that you'll never ever drink again, only to drink again. You know what I'm saying? So we know that some of these things don't feel good, and a lot of these drugs, you know, you go up and these come downs aren't there. So we know that. So it's kind of like, why do you keep doing this to yourself? I guess that's what people on the outside, like I guess somebody's parents or significant other, maybe even coworkers would say, why do you keep doing this to yourself? Why do you keep, man, there's something else going on. And nobody's going to keep doing that to themselves, abusing, binging the heck out of drugs and alcohol, unless something else is going on. Nobody's just trying to get that wasted for no reason. And the more wasted you get, it's like, the more better you think you're going to feel. Or maybe even the longer you think it's going to last. But the whole point is, obviously, you know everything is a mind-altering thing, a mind-altering drug or a mind-altering drink. So you technically are trying to escape your mind. And again, I'm sure by now you get the point that mental illness and substance abuse goes hand in hand. it's a bee in my throat. I like this article, though. Again, it was drugabuse.com, and the article was written by or reviewed by Mr. Eric Patterson. And we were going to also look into some ways to like prevent these kind of things. Or not really prevent it, but maybe spot it, the signs. And see if maybe we can try to be a change. in the world we see today, as best as we can anyway. Or maybe if we're listening to the signs as we go along, you know, we might think of someone that we might feel, and we could be wrong, because sometimes, you know, we all kind of overreact, but you might hear it, and it might sound like somebody that you know. I wonder, because ever since this has happened, and there has been another dance, Mr. Bourdain, he as well. It's just been a very weird week in the industry. I don't know. It's very weird and highly weird, boy. I don't know about over there. That's what I told you. I'm going to get on the YouTube later. For now, we're going to stick to what we're saying. We just got to be able to do better. Alright, let's take a quick break and come back with some signs for you guys.